I'm a little younger than 60, the age when Max Kutz said those engaging words that I used as a chalice or a call to celebration about where he is and was on his journey. Those of you who have lived well beyond 60 may have smiled at his eulogy-esque words that sound like the conclusion of a life, not the start of a new retirement phase he began a few years after that sermon. Those of you who are young and just beginning your life may have a little trouble relating to these wise reflections. For you, the world is still full of possibility and promise. For you, you may yet be honored with a postage stamp, assuming that when you're old, we still have mail delivery. You may still dream of holding a golden statue in an awards ceremony or having a medal hung around your neck for your valor and achievement. Those of us who may be most attuned to getting real with what's real are the ones who are in midlife, as I am. I've been on my journey for a while now and invested a lot of energy in a few life directions and purposes. The window for me to change course and become a particle physicist, a concert pianist, an orthopedic surgeon, a professor of German philosophy, or a jet fighter pilot has mostly closed. And if I'm honest with myself, those windows were never really open to begin with. Even though those windows may be closed, many others remain open. I'm so grateful to live in a free society that permits social and economic mobility. I wasn't destined to be born, live, and die on our family's ancestral homestead. I was not expected to follow in my father's trade, otherwise I'd be a professor of physical chemistry. I was not expected to become a soldier or a priest or a monk based on my birth order. Women are not expected to marry and to have children the moment that they become fertile, at least in the United States. I'm grateful for my life choices that were not limited by a national mobilization to deal with war or to deal with disease or disaster, as is happening for many people around the world today. Getting real and looking at what is yet possible on our life journey can still feel limiting, however. The promises we've made can limit future choices. The decision that Philomena and I made to marry and have a child set in motion many commitments that have significantly organized our lives and restricted our choices. This congregation made a big promise when we decided to build Emerson Community Hall. That congregational vote in 2006 made a commitment that put significant constraints on our budgeting process for at least the next 10 or 20 years, creating risks to go along with the new opportunities. Nationally, the Affordable Care Act, passed in 2010, is having huge effect on our national healthcare system that have been gradually taking hold, including the 2015 requirement that everyone have coverage or pay a fine. So think about that. So wherever we are on our life journey, there is value in periodically pausing to look at where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. When we are in the thick of life, it can be hard to deviate from the path of least resistance. Sometimes the only time we pause is when an obstacle appears in our way and we must stop and figure out how to get around it or figure out what to do next. When we do pause, it's helpful to reflect on the major drivers that have organized our lives. Many of us are following an inner vision or purpose, a dream of who we are, who we seek to become, and what we hope to accomplish in the short time we have on this earth. We strive to be masters of our own destiny. Our contemporary Western culture encourages us to follow our dreams and never give up. We should keep going forward, drive against all odds to accomplish our goals, overcoming any obstacles along the way. Inspiration comes from celebrity success stories that litter the media. Stories like the success of J.K. Dowling, creator of Harry Potter, who wrote her first book after a divorce. And while she was on welfare, she could barely afford to feed her baby in 1994. She manually typed the 90,000-word manuscript that was rejected dozens of times until the 8-year-old daughter of the CEO of a small London publisher fell in love with it. We love stories of self-made men like the fellow who couldn't hold down a job until in 1930 he started cooking chicken in a gas station when he was 40 years old. As the Great Depression continued, he kept working on that chicken recipe for the next 10 years, serving people out of his house. He even got some recognition. Until in the 1950s, an interstate highway was built nearby, taking away his road traffic and bankrupting him. He couldn't live on his $105 pension, so he decided to shop his chicken recipe around to restaurants. He got rejected about 1,000 times. Before Colonel Sanders found his first business partner and created Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was in his 60s. Abe Lincoln is an often cited example of overcoming adversity. In 1832, he lost his job and was defeated in his run for state legislature, although he did get elected 2 years later in 1834. The next year, he failed in business. 2 years later, his sweetheart died. And he had a nervous breakdown the year after that. In 1838, he was defeated in his run for speaker. He had two losses of nomination for Congress. He was rejected for land officer, defeated for U.S. Senate twice, and vice president once. He finally got elected president in 1860. What these hard-driving success stories miss is the value of stepping back, pausing, and asking the question, should I keep on following this dream? Do I really want to put this much energy in this direction? Sometimes we may not be aware of just why we are putting ourselves through the enormous amount of effort and struggle for a dream that may not even be ours. We all know of parents, maybe we are one of those parents who encourage their children to do what we or they never had a chance to do. Try a sport that they enjoyed, or play an instrument, or do something that will reflect well upon us. What parent, I ask you, could resist actively encouraging their children to become highly paid professionals? What parent doesn't want to have some influence over their child's choice of a mate? And on the other end of the spectrum, who among us dreams of having our children lay railroad track or dig ditches? Honorable though this work may be, compared to cyber criminal or heroin dealer, wherever our dreams come from, whatever their hold on us, pausing to reflect on them and their influence in our lives creates the opportunity for a decision. Here are some of those moments in my life. As I was graduating from college, I began an intimate relationship with a young woman. It didn't take long for me to fall in love with her and want to marry her. It wasn't quite the same on her side. Yes, she loved me, and we decided to get engaged, but she wasn't as ready as I was for marriage. I understood this. So we put off the wedding, and we moved in together. After a couple of years, I proposed a second time. We got a little further in the process until she got cold feet, and we called it off. But I'm a patient and persistent person. So I waited another year or so and proposed a third time. This time things looked much better. We had booked the place and we had selected the minister. But this attempt fell apart too, based on a fearful dream that she had. I finally paused, reflected, and took stock of our relationship. Something had changed in me after that third failure, and I suggested we separate and take a break from our relationship. That day she moved out, I was unexpectedly elated and joyful. I think we were both too nice to acknowledge that it wasn't the right relationship for either of us. The dream of a 4-county community organizing project may have been delusional from the start. I wasn't part of the formation of that dream that became a regional initiative supporting empowerment, or ARISE. I got drafted as its president in the spring of 2001 after spending a week in Buffalo getting trained to be a community organizer. I loved the community organizing training and all of the things that we learned. I greatly enjoyed the challenge of doing this kind of work in a multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-class training sessions. Well-led, staffed, and funded community organizing is amazing and transformative work. The first years of ARISE stimulated a lot of growth for me, holding together a fractious consortium of religious organizations. We advocated for education, youth, and employment in Albany, Rensselaer, and Schenectady counties. I'm deeply grateful for the support our congregation put behind this effort and my leadership, and Dick Dana's leadership when he was president. We did have some big successes, but the dream was way too big for the people and the resources we had to put to work. It was heartbreaking in the end to watch that dream die and let it go. The dream I continue to nurture is the relationship of Unitarian Universalism and Buddhism. The ambitions of the Unitarian Universalist Buddhist Fellowship are very modest right now. A convocation every 2 years, a quarterly journal, and a presence at Unitarian Universalist Association General Assembly once a year. March 20th through 22nd, we've invited Stephen Batchelor, one of the preeminent Western Buddhist scholars alive today, to be with us at the Garrison Institute in Garrison, New York. He will expound his vision of a secular Buddhism that may have some potential to find a home in Unitarian Universalism. Maybe already is. Some of you may have been reading Sam Harris's latest book, where he discusses Buddhism, humanism, and atheism, finding a great deal of common ground. And there's still time to register. Let me encourage you. You get a discount before February 1st. It's going to be great. So what can we learn from these examples about how to assess whether to keep following a dream or not? There are no easy guides or answers, I'm afraid. If you are about to become a Rowling, a Sanders, or a Lincoln, you'd better keep pushing forward till you get there. But in my first two personal examples, more effort and pushing were not going to work. There's some wise guidance that I found from a fellow named Dale Partridge that I'd like to share with you now about how to decide whether to hold on or let go. First, the truth is glaring and you already know it. Deep down, I sensed there were flaws in our relationship that were interfering with our ability to get married. I knew it, but I just didn't want to face it. As Arise started falling, I knew it wasn't working. But it was just easier at first to keep doing what we were doing and hope for the best. As the problems grew, I couldn't ignore them anymore and felt compelled to act. This is what getting real is all about. Usually it isn't much fun, but the result of letting go can release us to move forward into more creative and productive directions. Second, your gut will sense the end. Our digestive systems are deeply connected to the emotional centers of our brains. Our rational faculties are less well connected to those emotional centers. So our gut sometimes will be telling us what the mind wants to ignore. Not that the gut is always right, but the gut is a far better measurer of our emotional life. If things aren't working, our gut usually knows it first. Usually when we're living out vital, meaningful dreams, whether we are succeeding or failing, our energy and drive will be there, encouraging us on. When we are experiencing burnout, however, it is often because the passion and purpose has drained out of the dream. Finally, ask yourself, has my dream changed? Dreams may not last forever, especially if we've had some success. Part of my drive to become an electrical engineer when I entered college after high school was to understand how radios worked. That question kept me going until my junior year and I took nonlinear circuit theory. that once I understood how to create and modulate an oscillator, I was ready for a new challenge. It happened again when I understood how computers worked from the circuits through the software. Yet my passion to understand the human mind and lessen human suffering using the methods the Buddha taught is stronger and more vibrant today than it was 30 years ago when I took my first meditation class. I've had the good fortune to be aware when my dreams changed and been able to change with them. Sometimes those changes came to me in an instant flash, at other times in a slow dawning of recognition. In my experience, the awareness of what to do gets clearer as time moves forward. Pausing and reflecting can speed up the process. While others may advise you, no one else can know whether today is the day to make that change or not. The good news is you'll probably get more chances to decide in the future. The best news is that your value, worth, and dignity as a human being isn't conditional on which way you choose. You'll be worthy of love and care whatever you do. So be at peace with your choices and stay real. So be it.